Caitlin Clark Fever is breaking out again. 1 week after playing an LPGA Pro-Am, she's bringing her talents to the PGA Tour. The WNBA Rookie of the Year is the star of the show at the RSM Classic, and we're following along with the crowd. And one of the most high-profile leaders in the sport is moving on. Martin Slumbers is about to step down as CEO of the RNA, but before he goes, he's stopping by for his exit interview on the state of the game he leaves behind. And Johnson Wagner will be here. A lot of changes this week on the PGA Tour. We find out if he's smiling or frowning underneath that glorious mustache. Golf Today starts now.
Golf Today.
Two-season ending event getting ready to take place this week on the PGA Tour. It is the RSM Classic, and on the LPGA Tour, it is the CME Group Tour Championship. We got live reports coming from both Sea Island and Naples, Florida, throughout today's show. Hi there. Thanks for joining us here on this Wednesday edition of Golf Today. I am Todd Lewis, merely an accessory to one of the great golf writers on the planet, that being Eamon Lynch. And it's kind of a pressure cooker this week on both tours, on the LPGA Tour, the season-ending event, to find out who is the best $4 million first-place check. Meanwhile, on the PGA Tour, yes, somebody's going to hold a trophy there as well, but players are playing for their status to play next year, fully exempt in 2025. But that starts Thursday. We're going to have a little fun today. Caitlin Clark out playing in the Pro-Am at the RSM Classic.
Yeah, we leave the thumbscrews until tomorrow, but certainly the celebrity element today, Tom Brady also out there as well. Yeah. We hear a lot about how it's all doom and gloom in golf, and it's not a happy sport these days, but certainly the biggest sports stars in the world seem to want to spend a lot of time around this.
Absolutely. Game. Michael Jordan, a huge star. He's got his own club down in South Florida, Grove 23, that everybody wants to be a member at. But we're going to talk about what Caitlin Clark is doing this week. But first, we'll go back to last week. It was an amazing scene in the women's game as WNBA superstar Caitlin Clark teed it up on Wednesday in the Pro-Am for the Audica, driven by Gainbridge. That taking place at Pelican. Played the first nine with world number one Nelly Korda, and the second nine with tournament host Annika Sorsam. Look at that shot. I mean, everybody wanted to get close to this superstar in all of sports. And she's out doing it again. Another Wednesday tee time for Caitlin Clark, and there she is saying hi to Zach Johnson's family. She's playing with Zach Johnson. Zach, a big Iowa guy, so of course he wants to be in the same group with this Iowa superstar, and that being Caitlin Clark, who's now taking her talents to the WNBA, and there his family, she's walking the fairways, and the crowds are following her, Eamon.
And Jay Monahan over there on the right, playing as PGA Tour Commissioner in that same group as well.
And that young caddy, the young lady there, honor for her. All right, let's check out this shot. Looked pretty good, looked better than me.
Ripped one right down the middle. She did that last week on her first tee shot at Pelican as well.
Don't think she outdrove Zach Johnson. We will find out. Rex Hoggart's going to join us. We'll move to the 12th hole. Missed the fairway here, but again, nice swing, short, compact backswing, good follow-through.
Got a lot of pretty nifty wedge play by Caitlin Clark last week. A little bit more of it today.
By the way, at CSAC Golf Course, the Sea Island is tough, and there you see her walking with the Ryder Cup captain, Masters champion, and Zach Johnson. And again, we saw it last week. It was amazing there on the women's game at the LPGA Tour. And now she's over here playing on the PGA Tour at Sea Island, I should say. And she does have an impact. I was interested, to be honest, to see what kind of force she would be on the golf course in the Pro-Am last week. And obviously, she was a big one. What does she bring to the game of golf?
Eyeballs that might not necessarily be there. There was a really telling moment, I thought, in last week's Pro-Am, when on her final hole, she missed the green with her approach shot to the left. And one of the ladies in the gallery who saw the ball roll to her feet kind of threw it back inside the ropes, which I'll tell you is probably not necessarily a regular golf fan. But you see a lot of people who are showing up wearing Iowa jerseys. These are not necessarily the typical audience that you're going to see at an LPGA event. She's maybe not going to bring a different kind of audience to a PGA Tour event at a place like Sea Island, but she's going to bring a different vibe to it. You saw that there with Ludvig Oberg talking to her on the range, Zach Johnson there, the commissioner, wants to play in her group. She is one of those kind of transformational athletes right now, and she manages herself so well in those situations. And what we're seeing here is what we saw at the LPGA event last week, which is even the players all want their little moment with Caitlin Clark.
Absolutely. There are so many, both male and female, who have watched a lot of WNBA basketball this year because of Caitlin Clark. And now it seems like whatever she does, whether it's in fashion, whether it's in the arts, and now whether it's in sports here, they seem to follow her. And anything that she touches makes it a little bit better. And obviously she's doing that with golf right now. So it's good to see.
It really is, and she's handling herself with remarkable poise. Given the scrutiny that she's under, they could all learn from that.
Absolutely. Maybe she'll play somewhere over in Europe, and we're gonna talk to somebody from Europe now. We're gonna take you back to January. It was announced that the RNA CEO Martin Slummers would be stepping down at the end of 2024 after 9 years. Slummers began his position in 2015. He's led the RNA as the global governing body of golf around the world. And as a secretary of the iconic golf club there, we all know it, which dates back to 1754, he has supported its committees in serving its international membership.
And here is the bio of Martin Slummers. He's led modernization of the RNA's activities in his 9 years. That included a merger with the Ladies Golf Union. He oversaw the modernization of the rules of golf as well. He's also had some impact on the Distance Insights project, doubled the RNA's financial commitment to golf, and certainly a greater emphasis on women and girls, and served on multiple boards, including the official World Golf Ranking. An interesting time to be in that job. Martin Slummers joins us now. Martin, it's very kind of you to stop by for your exit interview as you move towards the door. You did retire once before in your previous career in finance. You later said that you were bored out of your mind in 6 months. You're now 64. Is this it? Are you done, or do you have more ambitions for another chapter?
Good afternoon, everybody. And I was a lot younger then, and I thought I could still play golf full time and sort of develop my game. And as you say, I was bored out of my brain within 6 months. No, I think this is it, and it's the last executive role anyway. I'd like to develop a sort of portfolio of non-executive, some consulting work, but essentially I'm going to spend some more time playing golf and seeing if I can enjoy some of the great privileges of our game.
Martin, obviously you have a great opportunity with your position at the RNA, and obviously there are many obstacles that you have to overcome as well. But as you look back on your career with the RNA, what are you most proud of?
I think sort of probably three things come to mind and that I'll walk away with feeling very good about. One is, you know, you had on your slide just then that we had the opportunity to merge with the Ladies Golf Union early on, and then we were able to sort of put our foot down and turbocharge everything to do with women and girls golf, and that has really given us a great opportunity to represent men, women, boys, girls at elite amateur level. And you know, the RNA runs about 40 championships a year now as a result of that. But during that period, you know, we've created the Women's Amateur Asia Pacific, we created the Women's Amateur Latin America, and we created the Africa Amateur and Africa Women's Invitational. So we created pathways now around the world for all the best men and women, boys and girls, to be able to work their way up in the amateur sport. But it's not just in terms of getting women and girls to play the game. We were very focused on how do we create a scholarship and a development program to enable more middle and senior management to be developed. We've had 10 cohorts of that go through now. And I argue that I've got probably the best Rolodex of the top women in the world of sports administration. I think the second thing was, you know, we made a commitment very early on to double our investment into the game of golf over decade. And that has enabled us to create the investment, particularly for women and girls golf, but not just that, all the way around the world. And if you look at the the world that the RNA is responsible for, which is everywhere except for the United States and America and Mexico. You know, there are now 62.3 million people consume golf in that region. That's up a million in the last year. So it's still growing, but it's up 10 million since 2018. And I think that's a real testament to the fact that A, the game is growing in popularity at the recreational level, that we are getting more diversity through in terms of women and girls playing the game as well as men. And it's also beginning to grow out of the more traditional markets that we've long thought through. So I'm very proud of that. And I think 62 million, yeah, we might see some ups and downs in the coming years, but we're past the tipping point. And I think golf is arguably one of the largest participation sports in the world. And then the third thing is, you know, our professional championships. I very much wanted to focus on the Open Championship and build the brand of the Open Championship. And to grow it, I said early on that in my mind, big time sport needs big time crowds. And we've certainly done that. And you saw that this year with Royal Troon, where, you know, in 2016, which ironically was my first one, we had 170,000 people. This year we had 250,000, in excess of 250,000 people. And I think that's created a different atmosphere at the Open. That the spectators really enjoy, but it's also that the players really enjoy. You know, they love the noise and the excitement. And I think you saw that Saturday afternoon this year with dreadful weather, with Billy Horschel and Justin Rose and Xander Schauffele, you know, really pulling their sleeves up in some really, really tough weather and playing. And the crowds, none of the crowds left. And they wanted to watch what was captivating golf. And then on the women's side, you know, with the merger with the LGU, we were able to take over the Women's Open that had, you know, in previous times had to be managed fairly carefully commercially. But with our resources and with the support of AIG, I think we've taken that event into arguably one of the world's finest events for women professional golfers. So I think those three things are things that I'm very proud of and hopefully have helped the game go forward.
Several times during your press conferences at the Open, Martin, you've expressed some concerns about this cash arms race in golf and the pressure that escalating purses put, particularly in organizations like the RNA that have a lot of obligations, a lot of which you've just mentioned there. Do you see any scenario in which the RNA would partner with an organization, even the Public Investment Fund of Saudi Arabia, to actually fund those obligations?
I have been very clear, you know, Eamon, and around that I think that the financial sustainability of the game at the professional level is a real issue for professional golf. I mean, I spent most of my life working in corporate organizations that are focused on long-term financial stability. And I believe that the increases in the prize money that we've seen over the last 4 or 5 years have really put that under pressure. I think the Open will stay the Open and very clearly keep that uniqueness to it. But it certainly puts some pressure on our ability to, as I've said before, to keep investing into the pyramid at the bottom of the pyramid. And quite frankly, any sport, but particularly golf, is only going to be long-term successful if we have a broad pyramid at the bottom with lots of people coming in and consuming our sport, and then that evolving up through those who have the talent and the willingness to work hard to get to the very top. And so, yeah, it puts a huge pressure on it, but I'm much more concerned about the overall long-term financial sustainability of the entire men's professional game if we're not careful.
Mr. Slumbers, we have a president-elect in Donald Trump who's about to take office in January again. He owns Trump Turnberry, and Turnberry was part of the Open Rota for a number of years, but has not been since he's made his way into the political sphere. Is considering where he is now, is that still kind of off the grid, having Turnberry back on the Rota?
I mean, to be very clear, I mean, we've never taken Turnberry off the rota. So, you know, we talk of 10 courses that stage the Open Championship, and that actually we look to use for other events. But the position at the moment in respect of Turnberry is we will not be taking any events there until we're comfortable that the whole dialogue will be about golf. That is a situation we're still not comfortable with at the moment, but that could evolve in the coming years. I mean, I think Turnberry is a fantastic golf course. A lot of people know that it's my favorite links course. You know, I think that that position is clear, and I think there is a path forward if that situation changes.
Can you clear up what you're not comfortable with?
I think golf, when you look at the major championships, we want the whole thing to be purely about the golf course and to be purely about the players that are competing on it, and to make sure that there is no sort of media noise that sort of detracts away from the fact that this is a golf championship and the oldest and original golf championship, and that should be the single source of the media coverage. And I think that's really important if we're going to preserve the strength of our events.
We've listed a lot of the highlights of your 9 years at the helm, Martin, a lot of accomplishments you're leaving behind. Is there one failure or one thing you got wrong that you learned most from during the last 9 years?
Not one thing. I've long learned that you learn more from your mistakes than your successes. So, you know, I've been learning as I've been going through. I started at the beginning, and I wrote down a piece of paper of the 9 or 10 things that I wanted to get done in that period, and I was very clear with my board that you know, I wanted to. I will do a minimum of 5 years and a maximum of 10 years. And I've ticked off pretty much everything that's on that list. Does that mean there's not a big agenda going forward? No, of course there is. And the one thing, the most important thing for me would be actually to see stability in the men's professional game. I think that if you look back over the last decade if you go pre-COVID, you know, the professional game was doing really, really well. You know, Keith in Europe and Jay in the US were doing a fantastic job growing, and it was a real pleasure to work. And then COVID all hit us, and as we all know, that was a tough time for everybody in so many different ways. But you know, I don't think I remember the day after the world went into lockdown, the group of us got together, started to talk about how do we get the game out of it. And at that point, we had no idea how to get the game out of it. You know, the game should be deeply thankful for enormous efforts of Jay Monahan in the US and Keith Pelley in Europe to actually find a way to restart golf, men's professional golf. And, you know, I think that was something the stories haven't been told strong enough about how great a job they did at that time. But, you know, then we've had a period of instability. And I suppose my one regret, Eamon, is that I'm a golf geek at heart. I love the bottom half of the game. I'm as interested in participation at the grassroots level as I am watching the very best. But I really would like to see the top end of the pyramid have some stability, have a focus on financial sustainability, have the best players in the world playing more often than 4 times a year, and that the dialogue moves away from just being about money to being about values of the game and the history of the game. So that'd be my only regret, that I'm leaving while that's still work in progress.
There was a time, it seems kind of quaint now, that the division in this game revolved around how far the golf ball goes. And that's kind of shadowed your tenure at the RNA as well. Are you happy with as much as you've achieved in terms of controlling that distance debate at this point, or is there more left on the table that needs to be done by your successor?
I think that we had a fairly, you know, it was a long period of time when we were working through the whole issue about distance and what's the right thing to do. And, you know, changing that was on my list of things that I wanted to get done. I believed two things all the way from the beginning, that golf is a game which is a balance of technology and skill. And whilst technology has been absolutely fantastic at the recreational game, I would question, and always did question, that at the very elite end, where the technology was not enabling skill levels to be differentiated enough. And secondly, that, you know, the world that we all live in now has a much greater emphasis on our environmental responsibilities. And I don't care where you live in the world, environmental responsibility is an issue today, or it will be an issue tomorrow, and that's absolutely guaranteed. And for those two reasons, I was always of the view that we needed to move forward. But I was also very conscious that for one reason or another, you know, nothing had really been done materially on technology for 20 years. And so we needed to do it in a way which was collaborative, that listened to lots of views, that expressed lots of views, that had plenty of opportunities to feedback and have different ideas. And, you know, people shouldn't get confused that collaboration doesn't mean everyone has to agree, but everyone needs to have a chance to have an opinion. And I think that's what we've done. You know, the decision was made, has been made, that the rules of golf will change on the January 2028 for the new conforming golf ball. And the work now is focused on operationalizing that. But I think more importantly, or as importantly, is that that has actually moved the dialogue to a constructive collaboration discussion across the industry that will mean this is not the one and done change. And I think the next the decades to come will have other things. But the prime focus now is to get the golf ball implemented for 2028.
Martin, final thing, you talked about earlier wanting stability in the men's game. You want to see the best players in the world playing together more than four times a year. And of course, for that generally to happen, the deal between the PGA Tour Enterprises and the PIF needs to come together. You may not be at the negotiating table, but I feel like you're more informed than most. How close do you think this deal is to happening?
Oh, we're genuinely not part of the negotiations, and very much against it. You know, I don't have a crystal ball about where the debate is going there. All I would say is that I do think for the future of the game, it is really important that we do get that, we do get stability, we do get clarity about how men's professional game is going to be structured, whether that's one tour or two tours. Frankly, I don't mind either way. I mean, I was brought up in an era where, you know, the European Tour is extremely strong with, you know, the Faldos and Ballesteroses and Woosnams of this world. But we do need some stability. And, you know, there's a lot of very sensible people around the table. You know, I have to trust that there's some very sensible discussions going on, and that there is not just a business discussion, but there is a moral and a values discussion about the future of the game.
Martin, you mentioned that you want to play a lot of golf. Now, I'm curious, what was your handicap index when you walked into the R&A, and what is it as you now move gracefully towards the door-marked exit?
It was 2 when I started, and it is still 2.
That's a man who's played a lot of golf on the job. Well done, Martin.
I played a lot of what I call business golf, and I'm looking forward to playing 2-foot putts that really matter. That's what I'm looking forward to, or not.
Well, it's been fun working with you the last 9 years. Martin, we wish you well in retirement.
Thank you very much indeed, and thanks for all your support of the game.
Yeah, thank you very much, Martin. Stay with us, Nelly Korda. She's looking to close her 2024 season in a big way at the CME Group Tour Championship with a $4 million winner's check on the line. We'll head down to Naples when golf today continues. Last Wednesday will be remembered as a great win in the women's game as WNBA superstar Caitlin Clark teed it up in the Pro-Am at the Annika. LPGA players asking Caitlin, hey, can you take a picture with me? A selfie, please? Why wouldn't you want a picture with the 2024 Rookie of the Year on the WNBA? And that was last week. This is right now. She's actually out on the course at the RSM Classic playing alongside Zach Johnson, who, like I mentioned earlier, is a big Iowa fan. Of course, Caitlin, a product of the University of Iowa, and she's all smiles, having fun. Our Rex Hoggard is right there in the midst of all of this, watching Caitlin Clark play in the Pro-Am. He joins us now live. And Rex, kind of, how would you describe the energy surrounding Caitlin Clark in this Pro-Am?
Todd, both you and Eamon have been here to this community. You've been to St. Simon's Island, and you know the one simple truth. It's a small community. It's a tight-knit community, but it is where secrets normally go to die. That wasn't the case when it came to Caitlin Clark playing in today's Pro-Am. As a matter of fact, it wasn't until pretty late last night, about 7:30 p.m. local time, that the officials sent out the Pro-Am tee times and made it official that not just Caitlin Clark was going to be playing today with Zach Johnson, but we have Tom Brady teeing off as well. No one knew, but everybody knew. Again, it's a very, very small island. This is where secrets come to die. And so what you see in the gallery is a lot of local folks who've been waiting for this for a very long time. And it's a carryover from what we saw last week at the LPGA event with the Annika, with her just bringing new fans to the game. You see the crossover. You see a transformative athlete who has decided to try her hand at golf, and there is just passion around the golf course. A lot of autographs, a lot of pictures being taken, and a lot of fun.
Rex, last week there was a lot of build-up to it. We knew Caitlin Clark was going to be playing the LPGA event for quite some time beforehand, unlike this week. And what we saw out there on the LPGA tour was a crowd that wasn't necessarily your traditional golf attendees. Do you get the sense this week that it is typically a golf audience? They're just embracing the opportunity to see Caitlin Clark, or are there fresh faces out there who would not otherwise be there?
This feels like more of a golf crowd. And again, this is a very small community. It's a very golfy community. There's a lot of courses here. It's a big part of the fabric of what happens here on St. Simon's Island. But that being said, there are a couple of interesting people in the gallery. As I mentioned, Caitlin is playing alongside Zach Johnson. They've played in a Pro-Am before. They played at the John Deere Classic. I'm sure there's a lot of Caitlin Clark fans. I'm sure there's a lot of Iowa fans on property. None of them are bigger than Zach Johnson. And maybe the only exceptions are his kids, who are actually wearing Caitlin Clark jerseys right now. They've been walking inside the ropes. They're very excited. And that goes to that crossover that we saw last week that you're asking about. I think we saw it even after the fact, how many people were drawn to the game that normally wouldn't have been, but they're WNBA fans. They're certainly Caitlin Clark fans. And we are seeing that a little bit to what we saw last week at the Annika.
Well, the line of the show is going to be where secrets go to die. And we now understand why Rex Hoggard spends a lot of time at Sea Island. But it is cool to have Rex on site there following Caitlin Clark in the Pro-Am. We will continue to check with Rex throughout our show. Thanks a lot, Rex.
And of course, let's take a look at who is where in the race to the CME Globe, the LPGA Tour wrapping up its season this week. And these were the final standings that made their way into the field at Tiburon. We're going to see action starting Thursday, 3 p.m. Eastern time on Golf Channel, streaming at 2 p.m. Eastern on the NBC Sports app.
Now, the top 60 players in the year-long race to the CME Globe standings qualify, with the tournament winner being named the Race to the CME Globe champion. Now, there is no points reset in the tournament, so Nelly Korda, although she was great in the regular season, has no advantage compared to the 60th player in the field. Winner of the 72-hole event will also win the CME Globe. Alternates, starting with player number 61 in the standings, will fill up the field due to withdrawals. And we are going to head to Naples, Florida, to check in with Amy Rogers, who is on site there. Got an umbrella. Looks like we got some rain happening there in Southwest Florida. And Amy, this tournament doesn't have a rich or deep history. It hasn't been on the schedule, not very long, but it is very impactful. How important is it to the ladies to win this tournament?
Yeah, this is a huge LPGA Tour had been on the schedule for about a decade now, and this year the top 60 in the Race to the CME Globe point standings have a chance to compete for the biggest payday in women's golf. Just last year, Terry Duffy of the CME Group announced that they would be doubling the winner's check for this year from $2 million to $4 million. And that's an amount of money that many of these players would never have dreamed of making throughout their career. That's more than the average total purse of a tournament on the LPGA Tour. And just like they won't soon forget that $4 million payday, it's hard to forget also what it was like for many of these players when they cashed their first check upon becoming professional.
It would mean a lot, of course. You know, I think we all have that in the back of our minds. But no matter what the purse is, as athletes, we always go into every tournament wanting to win. But what Terry Duffy with CME has done for this event, just to show the appreciation that he has for women's golf and for us just being here, we're so grateful for the partnership that we have with him and CME. And just to be able to tee it up for that amount of money, that's a huge deal. And I think that just shows where the women's game is going, and hopefully will move even further and better in the future.
Nelly, with $4 million on the line for the winner this week, what do you remember back about when you first got started, your first check when you were a professional?
Yeah, I was in Bahamas. I just remember I finished inside the top five, and I was like, okay, I'm good. I have enough money to get me through for the next couple of weeks, because obviously going from Symetra back in the day was Symetra, now it's Epson. I mean, you know, you didn't really have one. I was lucky enough to have a sponsor to help me. And then two, you know, every paycheck really counted at the beginning. So for me, you know, playing well right off the bat took some pressure, took some weight off my shoulders. But to see the difference, even from 2011, I mean, I've been lucky enough to kind of know what life on tour kind of is like through Jess's eyes, through Jess. So to see the steps and the progress that has been made since 2011 is incredible. And hopefully, you know, we keep taking advantage of the trend of women's golf and all the amazing stories and women's in sports and continuously rising from it.
15 years ago, it was on the now Epson Tour. I made a check for $500, and I am telling you, I could not splurge on anything with that money. I was already in a lot of debt, paying for my hotels and stuff, so I was just like, well, that's a long way to go. Yeah. Leading up to this event, I was just like, $4 million, what would I possibly do with that money? There's a house that's really, really nice on the beach. That's around that. I definitely would have been spending all of it, but it would be in my head constantly.
$4 million, it's so life-changing. I mean, it's incredible that the purse has been elevated, you know, to this amount. I would probably try to save as much as possible and then just go maybe on a nice vacation, you know, do something for people around me that supported me, like my family, boyfriend, coach, caddy. I feel like those are people that deserve a little something.
The total purse this week, $11 million. And even the runner-up here won't do too shabby either. They'll take home a $1 million payday. And each and every player that's in the field here this week guaranteed to take home at least $55,000, with this being a no-cut event. Now, as you can see, it's a little rainy here today. Fortunately, this is the only day this week that rain is in the forecast. We're expecting sunshine for the next 4 days as players compete for that $4 million. Todd.
Thanks a lot, Amy. Hopefully the sunshine will pop out this afternoon as well. Appreciate it. A reminder, here's how you can catch coverage of the CME Group Tour Championship first round action. Begins tomorrow at 2 p.m. Eastern on the NBC Sports app and continues at 3 p.m. on Golf Channel.
Well, there aren't many more pressure-packed situations than being the bubble boy in the very last week of action on the PGA Tour. Wesley Bryan is in that unenviable position. We're going to find out how he's approaching Make or Break Week, coming up right after this break.
Golf Central Update, brought to you by Callaway Golf.
Monday evening, the PGA Tour's policy board, along with the support of the Player Advisory Council, approved sweeping changes to the tour's eligibility criteria, field sizes, and total number of fully exempt members. Now, the changes will reduce field sizes at nearly every PGA Tour event, and most notably, cut the number of fully exempt players from 125 to 100. Now, these changes will begin in 2026. Interesting reactions at this week's PGA Tour stop, the RSM Classic.
I'm not numb to the fact that you know, we're cutting opportunities, right? It's not something that sits well with me, and it doesn't sit well with anyone that was in any of those discussions. But all of these decisions that get made, they're not all good or all bad, you know. So we're looking at every single kind of pro and con to every piece that moves around and trying to figure out the most equitable, fairest way to have a great product with the same time providing enough playing opportunities for everyone.
There's still enough access to where if you play really well and play good golf on the Korn Ferry Tour, play well in Q School this fall for some guys, like, instead of those younger guys that are, you know, looking at these changes thinking, you know, oh man, my back's against the wall, use this motivation. You can still play really good golf this fall in Q School, and you can get on tour right away. Like, I didn't have that option when I came out. I couldn't finish top five at final stage and get on tour. Now we have that. There's still plenty of access routes for players. Yes, it feels like maybe 20 to 25% of, you know, the access has kind of gone away in a certain way. But if you still play really good golf, it's going to take care of itself. Then it's going to create a compelling product, which is what the PGA Tour wants. The best players are going to rise to the top still, and we'll see how everything shakes out.
I have found over the years that when you play really well, it doesn't matter a whole lot what the Tour Policy Board decides. You know, things will work out pretty well in your favor. When you don't play as well, that's kind of when those things matter a little bit more. So my focus is to just go and do my job and try to play to the absolute best of my abilities and, you know, stick with that.
The RSM Classic is the final event of the FedEx Cup Fall, and as of now, it is still the top 125 players who will earn tour cards for 2025, as well as a spot in the Players' Championship. And the man entering the week in that number 125 spot is Wesley Bryan. He's been on a good stretch of golf lately. He faced some pressure, certainly at the Black Desert Championship in Utah. He had to sleep on this 14-footer for eagle on Friday night when play was called for darkness. Came back Saturday morning to complete his round to try to make the cut, and he delivered.
And that was a big putt because he turned that eagle into a top 25 finish. Played well on the weekend, and that's one of four top 25 finishes he's had in his last five starts, which put him in this position to have exempt status for 2025. And we welcome in Wes Bryan from St. Simons Island, site of the RSM Classic this week. And Wes, we highlighted how great you have been playing over your last five events. In contrast, prior to those starts, you missed 8 of your 10 cuts. You really found something in the fall. What is it?
Well, Todd, thank you for bringing up the missed cuts here.
I'm emphasizing the positive, though.
Starting to sound a lot like Micah Morris. But no, it's been a good fall. I feel like I've come into this fall relatively relaxed. And I mean, I've been hitting the ball nice, even through some of those poor tournaments. I felt like my golf game all around was in a relatively good spot. And I just knew that if I stayed patient, some results would come. And luckily this fall, we've been able to put it together and put some good tournaments. And obviously there's still one more that means a lot this week.
You entered the fall, Wes, as 156th in the FedEx Cup standings. You're up now. You're the bubble boy. The last four rounds of the season to go. What's the pressure like this week versus any other week?
I would say the pressure for me is maybe a little lighter than the rest of them, given we found something with the YouTube thing that I've really enjoyed. And some of the time that I got to spend off, we filmed a lot of YouTube videos. So I've kind of found a new passion there. And then also with having three kids now and a lot of the travels, trying to do both has been difficult. So I kind of had this mentality going to this year. I'm going to give it one last hoorah, but kind of where we're at on the FedEx Cup right now, it's redirected a little bit of my focus to try and finish the task at hand here this week and then kind of reassess. But as far as the pressure of this week, I just enjoy playing the game of golf. I've never really lived or died by any results. I try not to put too much of my identity into the game of golf. And I mean, at the end of the day, if I get full status or don't have full status. I feel relatively at peace either way.
You mentioned the YouTube stuff. I've seen it. It's informative and entertaining. How fulfilling is that for you?
I mean, really, when we got back into it four and a half years ago, really just getting to go back to how I started in the game, spending a lot of time with my brother, competing with him, trying to beat his brains in every single week. And really, I've developed some of my closest friendships in life through the YouTube stuff. And so the opportunity to get to spend more time with my brother and with some of my closest buds, I feel like is reinvigorated some of the love and passion for the game, albeit now it's a little more on the content creation instead of the competition, but it's still wildly competitive with the series that we started with the major cut, where we're going to major championship golf courses, playing 36 holes, trying to make the cut at these places. Like, there still is a competitive aspect and wanting to perform, as well as having 1v1 battles with George, just like the good old days. Like, that's fun. I like figuring out how to push his buttons more effectively. And so I just feel like for me, the game of golf has given me so much. It's given me an opportunity to make a living out of it and do what I love. The competition side has been great to me and my family over the last 10 plus years now, since graduating, I guess 12 years or so. And then also this YouTube side, it's been great as well. So really now at the point trying to balance the two, it's difficult, but yeah, it's as competitive and as fun as you could ever imagine.
You mentioned that you're at peace whatever the outcome is this week in terms of your status, Wes, and you had an interview with Kira Dixon in Mexico a couple of weeks ago, and you said you would be fine if you were kicked off the PGA Tour if it was performance related. That was in the context of all of these changes coming in terms of exempt players and field sizes. Does that mean you're feeling positive about those changes that are coming into effect?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I've always been under the impression there's 10 to 12 guys that make this tour money that keeps the wheel kind of turning. And obviously, it would be great if we got Tiger back playing great again, because he can single-handedly carry this game. But if he doesn't, I feel like it's still in good hands with your Rorys and your Scotties and your Xanders. Like, I do think that the game of golf is in a perfectly fine spot, but whatever it takes, like, it's no secret that the PGA Tour has been in a difficult spot. Every decision they make, it feels like they're either making the fans mad or making the players mad or whatever. So just trying to figure out how to maybe trim some of the fat, so to speak, off the tour. And again, if I'm that fat that needs to be trimmed, by all means, I'm completely okay with it. But if I play great, I know that I still have a fantastic opportunity to make a good living out here. Everybody has the same opportunity in 2025 under the current stipulations to get inside the top 100. And if they don't, then it's a shame. But I guess the ball's in their court to play good golf.
Wes, yesterday players went into the media center, the RSM Classic, and generally gave kind of the comments that you just said, kind of glowing remarks in regards to the changes that were made and approved by the PGA Tour Policy Board on Monday. Okay, that's in front of a camera, that's in front of a microphone. In the locker room, kind of give us the temperature of what players are saying about these changes.
Oh, I mean, the temperature's hot. The water's warm. People don't like it. People are upset. They're relatively vocal about it. And again, I see both sides of it. And to tell you that I truly don't care might be an understatement. I feel like I look at it as a position of being thankful and the gratitude that I have for the PGA Tour and what they've allowed me to do. The lifestyle that I've been able to live is 100% because of the PGA Tour. It's because of nobody else. And so I'm thankful. I feel like every day that I live is a walking testimony of the great things that the tour has done. Now, is there times where I'm a little bit uncertain of their ability to climb us out of the hole that we're currently in? Absolutely. But I just look at it from a position of gratitude.
Getting back to this week specifically, Wes, have you kind of run any of the scenarios of what you need to guarantee yourself a spot in that top 125? Or do you have an eyeball on who else might actually be able to impact your fate? Or are you just controlling what you can control?
Yeah, I'm just going to go out and try and win a golf tournament this week. I'm fairly certain that if you beat everybody you tee it up against, it leads to good things. And I feel like my golf game's been in a good spot, and I've been knocking on the door a little bit as of late. And I just want to keep good form and go out and try and compete. And again, however the chips fall, I'm completely at ease with it. If I miss the cut this week and fall out the top 125, I don't think anybody would be shocked. If I go and finish 30th and skate by, I don't think anybody would be shocked. If I go out and have a good week, I don't think at this point a lot of people would be shocked. There would be some people potentially, but yeah, I'm just going to go try and take care of my business. And if I play well, great. If I don't, then I'm still going to go home. Amazing wife, three beautiful girls, and they're not going to care whether or not daddy finishes in the top 125 or not.
Hey, Wes, I want to point out that something that you mentioned that really doesn't, I don't hear a lot out on the PGA Tour, and that is having that attitude of gratitude and being thankful for. What are you most thankful that the PGA Tour, the game, has given you?
Really just the opportunity to compete and do what I love since I was a kid. I just love teeing it up and going at it against guys, going at it against the golf course, and the fact that I've been able to make a decent living off of it has been amazing. And I do feel like there's a lot of sour guys out here that feel like it's more of a right that they have because they've been so great all through every stage of the game, and it's unfortunate, but there's definitely a lot of guys out here. If you peel back all the layers, they would have a deep appreciation for the PGA Tour. But right now, in the midst of the turmoil and the changes and all this, and a lot of people's careers potentially ending a little sooner than they could have because of the changes, yeah, I understand their disappointment.
Well, rising YouTube star Wes Bryan, along with your brother and great player as well, the only South Carolinian to win the RBC Heritage. That's that guy, Wes Bryan. Yeah, and said that's not too far away from Sea Island now. We wish you all the best, Wes, this week, and have a great tournament.
Absolutely. Thanks, guys.
Thanks for joining us. All right, stay with us as we continue here on Golf Today, this Wednesday edition.
With more, it's time now for Golf Today Roundtable as we welcome in our colleague Johnson Wagner. Johnson, you've been around this game for a long time now on the broadcast side of it, also as a player. What's your top line reaction to what you saw come out of that policy board on Monday? Is it a yay or nay from you?
Well, Eamon, I'm looking at it from two different perspectives. As a player and talking here at the RSM to my friends on the golf course, I was a guy that always lived in sort of the 80 to 150 range on the PGA Tour FedEx Cup points list. So as a player, I hate seeing all these jobs be cut. I think a lot of players feel that way. Now on the media side perspective of it, I think it makes a lot of sense. I think it's ridiculous when we have beautiful weather and you cannot finish the field on a Thursday or Friday because there's too many people playing. So I get that aspect of it. Cutting from 125 to 100, I don't really like. But the Korn Ferry Tour has been built up with million-dollar purses this last season. So you can go out there and still earn a living and work your way back. And I think what I appreciate the most out about these changes is the fact that I think 20 to 30 on the Korn Ferry Tour has a real disadvantage starting out the season. I think of a guy like Trevor Cohn for next year. I think he finished 27th. He's behind the eight ball already. So with less people earning their cards, I think there's going to be more opportunities for rookies to have success early on in their career.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, these guys with this new streamlined system that the PGA Tour is going to put into play in 2026, there are going to be more starts for those who earn a card. But Johnson, what I may be a little bit concerned about is the fact that the turnover, it may be kind of difficult. We may not have a lot of newer names coming into that top 100 are playing because of the limited fields and the limited exemption status. What's your thought on that?
Well, I mean, I think Lucas Glover has been pretty vocal about all these things over the last couple of years. And I use him as an example because he made the top 50 last year in 2023. And of all the guys that made the top 50 in 2023, 43 of them made it back to the playoffs this year. So there was only seven guys. So this number, this top 50, is such a huge advantage. I think what the tour did and what got passed Monday is that some of these mid-level points, if you finish between 10th and 25th in a signature event, they used to be massive points. So now those points are coming down, and I think hopefully we're going to see a little bit better churn rate. But still, it does appear like the PGA Tour is becoming more of a closed shop, which is one of the biggest knocks we've all had against LIV for so long. It seems like the PGA Tour is just kind of following their business model to some degree.
Are you buying the Tour's argument, Johnson, that this is really motivated by a fix for slow play on the PGA Tour? Because presumably, if slow play was the issue, they would actually enforce a meaningful pace of play policy before they would actually eliminate playing opportunities. Because the flip side is that it's just something the top players want to see happen, and that it's a convenient fig leaf to talk about slow play.
And they haven't. If you want to do something about slow play, then create a policy where you actually penalize players who play slow. Now you're just going to give them a bigger buffer zone. There'll be more spread out time between tee times. It'll be 13-minute intervals. And so now players can play as slow as they want. Eamon, I completely agree with you. This is a decision made by top players who are all holding powerful positions on the PGA Tour policy board. And I don't blame them. If I was a top player, I wouldn't want to play against as many people as 156 anyway. But I just think the PGA Tour has gotten too scared of losing the top players that they're letting them make decisions about a sport that they, you know, players don't make decisions in the NFL. Players don't make decisions in the NBA about how their organizations are run. And I personally think that the top players have too much say right now.
Man, hey, Johnson, you've played out on the PGA Tour for a number of years. You're a multiple winner. Now you're out here looking at it from the media perspective. I would love your input on why do you think the Tour doesn't give out penalty strokes for slow play?
We have talked about it for years, and I think the majority of players want it, but I have no idea. The Masters did it back in 2013. Yeah. The Open Championship did it in 13. I was actually playing with Hideki Matsuyama Saturday at the Open at Muirfield in 13 when he got a penalty. It's not the rules officials. The rules officials do an incredible job. It's something coming from higher up saying we don't want to penalize. The fines clearly aren't working. Something needs to happen.
Just going back to the point you just made, Johnson, about the idea of players making these decisions, or at least a small, powerful group of players. Is that a fundamental problem with the Tour? I get that it's sort of a member organization, but you're now in the situation where members are making decisions that impact the ability of other members to make a job. That doesn't necessarily impact them, although there are a lot of players who will be impacted by these cuts who are actually supportive of them. Does that speak to a fundamental problem that decisions ought to be made by an executive branch at the PGA Tour and not overly influenced by the players themselves?
Yes, and I think since we've seen all this stuff with LIV, the balance, it used to be a pretty equal balance between independent directors on the board and players on the board. And now it's really skewed heavily where the players have more power. And I mean, that's a good thing, but who's to say that they're making the right decisions for the entire membership? I think a lot of players are pretty upset with the process at the moment. A lot of lower end players.
Johnson, I want to pivot now to what is the FedEx fall? You know, we saw a great story last week with Rafa Campos winning for the very first time after the birth of his child. He's trying to, you know, get into that top 125 number, which he has now secured. And he secured his card for the top, next 2 years. I'm going to go back to last year, Camilo Vijegas winning, Erik Van Rooyen winning. I mean, these fall events have produced a lot of great stories. I mean, Tiger Woods won his very first tournament at a fall event in Las Vegas. How important or impactful for the fans and storylines are these fall events?
I think very impactful. I mean, I look at Austin Eckroat winning Worldwide Technologies. I was on the broadcast that week, and I think Austin Eckroat, if you look back at Scotty Scheffler's first couple of years on the PGA Tour, Austin Eckroat's kind of in that same vein. I think you're going to create a lot more stars, and giving these rookies opportunities to play 3-4 weeks in a row, it's really important if you're not a top-end player. As far as fans go, out here at the RSM Classic, y'all just showed Tom Brady, Caitlin Clark. There are big crowds. There's a great field here. I think it's, you know, a lot of people complain that there's too many PGA Tour events, that the season's too long, and I get that. But I think it's, people love golf, and it's, I'm personally sad when it's a bye week and there's nothing to watch.
There is a lot of chatter out there on another subject that involves the same themes of top players and money, Johnson, which is the idea of guys being paid to play for the United States team at the Ryder Cup at Bethpage. Are you on the side that says, you know what, these guys generate a lot of revenue, they're working that week, they ought to be paid? Or are you on the side that says, you know what, guys, you get a lot of money out of this game, this is an organization that has a lot of other obligations in growing the game, why don't you just actually give back for a week?
I see both sides of it, and I'm going to be a little long-winded here. $750 a ticket per day, that tournament is going to make $22 million a day, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, just on ticket sales. This doesn't include corporate hospitality. It doesn't include the merchandise tent. There is a ton of money going to the PGA of America. I think it would be nice if there was a little bit of clarity from the PGA of America's side, like these dollars go here. And I have no problem with the charitable donations. I think in 1999, it started with every player that played got $100,000 to their charity. Well, the Ryder Cup's grown a lot more. So I think players would be happy if they could pick a charity of their own, and we're going to get a $250,000, $400,000 charitable donation. I think that would make players feel a lot better. As far as them getting paid to play, no, I don't think they should necessarily get paid to play in the Ryder Cup. And I think Rory McIlroy's comments were pretty spot on. He said he'd pay to play. I would certainly pay to play a Ryder Cup as well.
Johnson, as always, we appreciate your insights. You enjoy your time on St. Simon's Island. Look forward to you being part of the broadcast team at the RSM Classic, and a lot of drama, as I mentioned, happening this week. Another great fall event. Thanks, Johnson.
Thanks, guys.
If you're in the market for a podcast, be sure to listen to the Golf Channel podcast with Rex Hoggard and Ryan Lavner. Rex, the hardest working man in showbiz these days. And if you miss any of our show, check out the Golf Today podcast, which includes the best interviews from the program. And be sure to subscribe to the Golf Channel YouTube page. Let's have a sneak peek at the latest episode with Rex and Lav.
All right, Rex, Rory McIlroy won for the fourth time in 2024 in Dubai. You're a writer. Give me one word to describe Rory's 2024 season.
Emotional. On the golf course, off the golf course, go back to Pinehurst. It was a heartbreaking Sunday, not being able to get that major championship that's eluded him for a decade now. He needed a week away, wandering around New York City with earbuds in. Just the sight of that, just the thought, makes me laugh, where he's trying to come to terms with what happened. And then you factor everything that happened off the golf course. Filed for divorce from his wife in South Florida, decided not to file for divorce. And then you factor in everything that went on with the PGA Tour. And he's still very much in the middle of the negotiations with Saudi Arabia's public investment fund. It had to be emotional.
That's a very good answer. There's so much great imagery when it comes to Rory McIlroy, whether it's ripping his shirt one year, whether it's going to be the AirPods in, walking through Central Park. Remember the Masters collapse with sort of putting his head down in his forearm. I would go in a similar vein and say draining. And it wasn't even just Pinehurst. It was the other disappointments that he's had, whether it was the BMW PGA Championship or the Irish Open. He kept sort of blowing it in crunch time. That has to take its toll on you, in addition to all the other things that were going on in Rory McIlroy's life.
These were always the most enjoyable tests for me when I was in school, because I had a 50-50 chance. True or false, should Ryder Cup players be paid?
True, it should not be $400,000. That's a laughable sum in relative terms. Not for you and I, trust me. We are golf writers. We are not getting paid $400,000. However, if you are a PGA Tour player or a European Tour player, $400,000 in relative terms is not enough. That's essentially equivalent to a 13th place finish in the Players' Championship. Shouldn't be $400,000. It shouldn't be $40 million. The answer is probably somewhere in between. What I don't like is the idea of U.S. team members getting paid and the European team not getting paid or sort of diverting their funds elsewhere. That seems inequitable and also a PR nightmare that can be used, sort of weaponized against them.
True to the extreme, because this is player empowerment to the nth degree. I think what you look at here, the Ryder Cup is a big business. It's a successful business. It's a big piece of the pie, and the players, the labor, deserve a piece of that pie.
If you like true and false, you're really going to love this one. All right. In the blank, 2025 PGA Tour Player of the Year is whom?
I'd much rather do multiple choice on this one, but A is Scottie Scheffler. I have to go with Scottie Scheffler, only because if I sat here for 10 minutes and you gave me the opportunity to try to come up with some sort of reason why he wouldn't. Injury, maybe? There have been some little small injuries he's dealt with.
Injury
is
the only thing keeping Scottie Scheffler from winning 2025 Player of the Year.
Yes, because everything that he did this year, even in the face of adversity, we seem to want to forget that he spent Friday morning at the PGA Championship in jail and then went out and still competed and put himself into contention for another major. I think everything about his season this year screams that, yes, this is sustainable.
You could make an argument, it might not be a good argument, for Xander Schauffele. He's the only player in the world of golf who was top 40 in every single major statistical category, threw the bag. And the fact that I like about Xander goes beyond the statistics. It's the motivation aspect. He was still second to Scottie Scheffler. He was second in terms of Player of the Year voting. He was second in terms of the FedEx Cup. He still has something to shoot for when it comes to the major championships, the two that he still has remaining, with the Masters and the U.S. Open. He actually has a couple of close calls in his career.
Multiple choice. You ready? A, B, and C. You're going to have to pick one. Which one does the PGA, which player does the PGA Tour miss the most? Bryson DeChambeau, John Rahm, Brooks Koepka.
I'm going to go D, all the above. I think it's for different reasons. You obviously miss the entertainment aspect from Bryson DeChambeau. You miss the competitiveness of John Rahm in being a skilled, potentially generational player that he has been on the European side for a very long time. Brooks Koepka, you sort of miss that jock swagger and the stature of Brooks Koepka. I guess basic answer would be Bryson DeChambeau because he still is such a fan favorite.
Bryson, hands down, when you look at what he did at Pinehurst, took a literal victory lap around the property with the trophy in his hand. You look at what he's doing on social media. I'm still waiting to see when he makes that hole in one. I'm on number four. Don't spoil alert with me right now. I don't want to hear when it is. I think that's the kind of personality that the tour misses. Of all the players that LIV Golf paid to come over, he's the one that's making the most impact.
And if the PGA Tour could have their way, they would have all three back.
Really is like Meet the Press for golf nerds. And here is a reminder of where you can find the Golf Channel podcasts. We'll be right back.
Wicked! We want to remind you can get your tickets now for the most magical event of the year. Wicked is rated PG. It hits theaters this Friday. Don't miss this spectacular cinematic event. I have seen it on stage. I cannot wait to see it on screen. And look at our studio here. We've gotten Wicked as well.
Well, Wicked has a place in golf, right? Wicked good, Wicked bad.
That's true. And we're going to show you a little bit of both right now. We're going to start with you. Wicked bad?
I got to say the most wickedly unlucky break anyone has ever gotten in the history of this game, and I will not be contradicted on this, Todd. Joe Daly. Go back to Q School. This was in 2000. This was for double bogey. An improperly replaced cup. The ball bounced out. Joe Daly went on to miss his card by one stroke at Q School, and he never again got a PGA Tour card. He labored on the Corn Ferry Tour for a decade after that. It's really hard to think of a more wickedly bad break.
That is truly wicked, and we have our green video there to show you as well. So that is by far a great example of being wicked on the golf course. I kind of have, I'm reluctant to show this because he's a great friend of ours and he was on our show. And that being Johnson Wagner, he's had some wicked moments in 2024 during Live From. All right, first off, this he's got a club in his hand, and look at I'm I don't know how he did not separate his shoulder throwing that. And there you see Rich and Randall and Paul checking in to see if he's okay, and he is. All right, here he is, U.S. Open. Oh yeah, that is the toe shank.
That didn't relate to that.
Yeah, it's a PGA Championship, actually. Here's the President's Cup. And, yeah, I mean, he's had just a wide kaleidoscope of misses on live TV.
But he has kept laughing all the way through it, though.
But I've texted him. I said, man, this is going to make you more endearing to the fans because we all do it. And when you've got the bright light of a camera and live television pointing at you. But this is wicked good. This is Bryson DeChambeau. And this is Johnson replicating his bunker shot on the 18th hole while Bryson is there watching, holding the trophy. And look at this. Look at this. One of the shots of the year in all of golf. And watch how happy he is. I mean, just watch how happy he is. I love that.
Everyone loves a redemption story.
I love that. Love Johnson Wagner being a part of our broadcast. He brings so much information and entertainment, no doubt.
He really does. And for a guy who's actually, he does have chipping issues, which he's made clear through the course of the year, it takes a lot of strength for a guy who's a proud professional athlete to go out there and do what Johnson
does. Yeah, that's right. It takes courage. It takes courage to come out there and do what he does. And he does such a great job. And don't forget, again, you can get tickets for the most magical event of the year, Wicked. It is rated PG. Hits the theaters this Friday. Don't miss this incredible movie.